Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 80, Ring of Fates. I am your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's guest co-host, Andy Stenobot Myers.
Hello.
Andy, thanks for coming back and helping me out with the show. You know, it occurs to me that the last time you were on, we really didn't get to talk about your history with Nintendo and Nintendo Power. So before we get into things, do you want to let people know exactly what you were doing when you were at Nintendo Power?
Yeah, sure. I worked at Nintendo Power for quite a while, actually, starting in 1999.
Oh, wow.
I started as a designer, and then I ended up transitioning over to be a writer, and I really loved working there, and I worked on all sorts of things, and I wrote a lot of player's guides, and the magazine was a big part of my life for about 6 or 7 years. So.
And you also handled the community section, right?
Yeah, I did. That was probably my favorite part of the job. I started working on that at the very beginning of it, when we first had the idea. The community section was really cool. Like, for me, like, I mean, I'm sure you can relate, Chris, but working on a magazine is a ton of work, especially when you also have to write player's guides.
You bet.
And it's really easy when you're doing that kind of work to just sort of have your head down and just not be very engaged with, you know, other people, because you just have so much work to do. And for me, the community section was just a really important way to just feel connected to the readers and the people that we're actually doing all this for. So that was probably my favorite part, and I really missed doing it. It brought me a lot of joy, and it was very rewarding.
Well, after we left Nintendo and came to Future, you know, we had some really big shoes to fill when it came to the community section. So, yeah, we had a lot to live up to when it came to what you did there. And you know, I like to think we did a good job, but yeah, you laid some great groundwork for us.
Yeah, it was great. I read it all the time after Future took over. Didn't drop in quality at all, so nice job.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that. Moving on, we've got plenty to discuss in the world of Nintendo. We've got some news to talk about. We've got some merchandise to discuss. And then we've got this week's big topic, which is the most replay-worthy video games on Nintendo systems. But before we get to that, of course, let's start things off with the news. Specifically, Nintendo has recently released its third quarter financial earnings report. Ooh, financial stuff. Dollars and cents. Very exciting. Very exciting. But we're going to cut through all of the numbers and nonsense and just deliver what some of the highlights were from this report, if that's okay.
Sounds good to me.
For one thing, we got confirmation that Pokemon Sun and Moon, unsurprisingly, sold phenomenally well. They have already sold a combined 14.69 million units, and that means it's well on the way to becoming the best-selling game on the Nintendo 3DS. And that's only after being out for a couple of months. So it's not there yet, but it's almost certainly going to be.
Wow.
Because that's very impressive.
Very.
Super Mario Maker for the Nintendo 3DS has already sold 2 million units across the world, and I wasn't really expecting it to do that well since, you know, it's basically a somewhat watered-down version of a game that's already out there on Wii U. But 2 million, that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty surprising to me as well. I was not very excited about the 3DS version, so it's cool that people enjoyed it.
Yeah, I guess there were just plenty of people that, you know, have 3DS systems but don't have Wii Us. So I guess there was an audience for it.
Right. Yeah, I think if it would have come out before the Wii U version, I probably would have thought it was amazing. But the Wii U version was just so great that it felt like a bit of a letdown. So
yeah, I see what you're saying. It's kind of like with Smash Brothers. Since the 3DS version came out first, it was like, oh yeah, let's get this. And they were able to like upgrade to the Wii U version. They had the 8 players in there. And this, it could have been sort of the same thing. You know, bring it out and then bring out the Wii U version with the online. But oh well. Anyway, I digress. Let's see. During this financial quarter, 6.45 million 3DS systems were sold, but only 760,000 Wii Us were sold.
Well, that's not too big of a surprise. It's been kind of on its way into the sunset for the last little while now.
Yeah, I mean, that almost sounds like too many, considering that during this time period, Nintendo only released exactly one Wii U game, that being Paper Mario. So, yeah, I'm surprised that they moved as many as they did, to be honest. They also said that amiibo and digital sales were down, but again, that shouldn't be too surprising because there were a lot fewer amiibos out there compared to previous years, and there were a lot fewer games out there than in previous years. So that stuff shouldn't be too surprising either. No numbers were given for the NES Classic in the North American version of the financial report, but it sounds like about 1.5 million units were sold, I think, worldwide. I think that's combining the NES and the Famicom version. And no doubt they would have sold way, 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 way more if they had made them.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a reason why they're not anxious to talk about it. It was a huge missed opportunity. I ended up getting one, but only because, you know, because I have friends that work there.
Yeah, it was tough.
It seemed like it was poised to just be a huge hit, and there just wasn't nearly enough out there to buy. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it caught them by surprise so much, but they say it did. But yeah, it had it could have sold way, way more. But I mean, 1.5 million, that's even more than I would have expected. So
yeah,
it's good that it's got like 100% sell-through. That's something. And then just looking through the details of the financial report, I couldn't help but notice there was no sign of the third Box Boy game or the Box Boy Amiibo scheduled to come out to the U.S. That's one that's about to hit Japan any day now. But unfortunately for fans of the North American version, I guess we're not going to be getting it, at least not in physical form. Maybe we'll still get the third one as a digital download, but I was kind of looking forward to getting that Amiibo, and now it's probably looking like I'm going to have to import it.
Yeah, that Amiibo looks really cute.
Yeah, I'm not even the biggest Box Boy fan, but I would still really like to get the Amiibo.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking.
We also found out there is a new Cooking Mama game on the way called Cooking Mama Sweet Shop, coming to the 3DS from Rising Star Games. A day or so after this was revealed on the financial report, then the official press release came out and talked about what the game is all about. There's a trailer out there now. It is a new Cooking Mama game filled with the same kind of mini games that you're familiar with in the series. Plus, it looks like there's some sort of sales aspect. And of course, as you can tell from the name, Sweet Shop, it's all focused on desserts and stuff. So I think I gained like 5 pounds just watching the trailer.
Well, I love Cooking Mama. I have to admit, though, I haven't played a Cooking Mama game since the Wii U one. Maybe it was the first Wii U one. I can't even remember what it was called, but they've all been pretty great, the ones I've played at least.
Well, I really liked Cooking Mama to start with. I thought it was a brilliant concept, and I thought that some of the gameplay was really intense. But over the years, the difficulty has gone way down, and they just, you know, never really add in the kind of features I liked. I felt like it was just doing the same thing over and over and over. But I'm wondering that by adding in the sales aspect, they're kind of putting in maybe the overarching metagame I've been hoping for. You know, something to tie all the cooking minigames together. So it's not just, oh, minigame, 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 you made a recipe, okay, there's no progression. But I'm hopeful that maybe something like that is in there now, because if that was there, then my interest in the series would be greatly renewed. So I'm crossing my fingers on that one.
Well, we'll have to check it out when it comes out.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious too. We found out that Animal Crossing Mobile has been delayed until the next fiscal year. Originally, it was due out before the end of March, but now it's delayed until sometime after that. There's not really any other news about it, but I guess we'll have to expect it some other time in the next 12 months, starting in April.
That's probably good. That's one of those games that they just have to get it exactly right, and I think it could be a huge hit on the phone, so.
Yeah, there's no need to rush it. We've still got Fire Emblem coming out, any day now.
Yeah, I just pre-registered for it on my Android phone today. And I'm not a big phone gamer guy, so this is pretty rare for me to even download a game, let alone pre-register for one. So.
Well, I'm definitely going to be checking it out as well. But yeah, that'll definitely be keeping us busy for a while, so I guess there's no real rush on Animal Crossing. And then I guess just the bottom line with this financial report is that Nintendo was indeed profitable. Profitable somewhere to the tune of 50 billion yen, I believe. I guess that's not too surprising. It's the holiday season. That's usually Nintendo's most profitable quarter. But it is good to see, yes, Nintendo is indeed making money. And I'm sure they're going to be profitable for the year once Switch comes out and Zelda comes out. And they're probably going to have an even bigger fourth quarter. So it's all good.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I think I said this last time I was on the podcast, but I mean, the future, I think, looks really bright for Nintendo. I think they're doing a lot right with the Switch. I think they're explaining it in a way and learning from mistakes with the Wii U. Even though I thought the Wii U was a great console, they never really figured out how to sell it. With Nintendo finally embracing mobile games, but sort of doing it their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be, so far, being well-received. I think there's a lot to look forward to. I personally think the Switch is just going to be a huge success.
Well, it seems to be that way so far. Sort of as a footnote to all this, Nintendo's president, Mr. Kimishima, says that Switch pre-orders are so good, they are actually increasing production over what they had originally planned. So things seem to be going well.
Have you pre-ordered one?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I pre-ordered one as soon as it was available.
You know, I was complaining last time I was on the podcast about how there were just no games at launch. But then
That's still kind of true.
Yeah, but then I have to say I checked out Snipper Clips or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that does look pretty great. So that increased my excitement level a little bit.
Yeah, that game does look very interesting. Supposedly, it's only going to be $20, and it's going to be download only. And it looks like it may or may not hit right at launch, but if it's not at launch, it'll certainly be shortly after, later in March. So that's one to look forward to.
Yeah, and definitely the kind of game that doesn't seem like you could play on any other console. Seems to be using the Switch mechanics in a really interesting way.
Yep, absolutely. Of course, the other game that we're all looking forward to is The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And to go along with the game itself, there is, of course, new Zelda merchandise on the way. Andy, have you seen the pics of the new Breath of the Wild Link Nendoroid action figure that's coming out soon?
I did. Yeah, I looked at him. I'm not the biggest fan of that kind of thing. I think mostly because I really like how with every Zelda game, the art style kind of changes and becomes its own thing. So kind of taking those characters and putting them in a different art style, it's kind of interesting and fun, but not exactly my thing.
Well, I'm kind of with you there. I really like the Nendoroids that, you know, mimicked the art style really well. Like the Wind Waker Link, it was a perfect fit for the Nendoroids. I'm not sure if it is for Breath of the Wild Link. But I do really like what they're doing with these toys. There are two versions of it. There's a regular version, and that includes two face plates, both yelling and smiling. It includes a bow, a quiver, a sword, a sheath, a shield, and the Sheikah Slate, and you can pick that up for around $45. But then the DX version is really cool because it includes all that stuff, as well as an axe accessory, a club, a chicken leg. I love the fact that there's a chicken leg. That's awesome. The riding hood that Link wears when he is on the horse often, and it comes with an actual horse. And so you get all this extra stuff, all these other accessories, for only about $60. You know, I think that's pretty impressive, pretty cool. Not bad at all if you want to decorate your room or your work area with some Breath of the Wild merchandise.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
However, I am kind of with you, and I think that I would much rather have a Breath of the Wild toy that looked more like the in-game version. You know, I have a more realistically proportioned Link from Skyward Sword. I'm hoping, and I believe they are going to make more realistic-looking versions of Link from Breath of the Wild. I'll probably hold out for something like that. But I don't know. This cute Link with the horse is kind of neat and adorable. So I guess we'll see. Yeah, I haven't pre-ordered anything yet, but it is pretty nifty.
By the way, back in the Nintendo Power days in Redmond, Chris Hoffman had quite the Mega Man toy collection. One of the biggest I'd ever seen.
So I did.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot because I curated the community section. So,
well, it hasn't gotten any smaller, let me tell you that.
I believe it.
Plenty of Mega Mans, as well as Zeldas and Marios and other Nintendo characters to go with it. And, of course, I have spent lots of time and money collecting Amiibo.
Amiibo!
Most recently, I just added 3 more Monster Hunter Stories Amiibo to my collection. Now, if you're not familiar with Monster Hunter Stories, it is an RPG based on the Monster Hunter universe that is only out in Japan so far. And they released 3 Amiibo alongside the game, and then they released 3 more back in December. So I picked up all of those. And what I got was a character named Cheval with Leolea, Ayuria with Barioth, and Dan with Kurupeko. And I apologize to any Monster Hunter fans if I'm completely butchering their names, because I don't know how to actually pronounce Monster Hunter names. I'm sorry. And in fact, I have not played Monster Hunter Stories at all, but I do really like the way the characters look. I do love the way the Amiibo look, and I didn't want to miss out adding these to my collection, so I picked them all up, and I am pretty happy with them. Cheval with Leolea is my favorite. The rider pose is really dynamic, with an outstretched arm holding a sword, and the monster pose is really cool. And just, he's a really cool looking creature, and he has these great pattern details on his wings, so I really like that one. Ayuria is really detailed, and she has this neat outfit with a little cape, and her eyes are kind of weird. They just kind of look like she's got this blank stare. But other than that, her figure is really cool. And Barioth is a really cool looking monster design with these huge fangs and a split tail. And he has lots of impressive texture work going on. And then Dan is probably my least favorite of the group. He's just sort of big and goofy and chunky. And he's got this furry coat and a big goofy grin. And Kuvarpeko is kind of goofy also with this big old snout. But I certainly don't mind having him in the collection with the other two. They're all pretty neat, all things considered. Plus, all three have interchangeable riders, just like the first wave. So you can actually take the rider off any of the monsters and swap them around. That's just a really neat little gimmick, and I wish it had come to the U.S. because of that. But yes, yeah, so far, no word on that ever happening. And from what I've heard, the game kind of underperformed in Japan, so maybe that makes it a lot less likely that we will ever see these over here. But I hope so. I hope they find a way to come over, and I hope the game comes over too, because it does look neat to me.
So, Chris, what is your amiibo count at now?
Oh, man. I am not sure what the total count is, but it's over 100.
Do you have every amiibo?
I think I have every amiibo except for the Skylanders amiibo hybrids. Because there were four of those. There was a Donkey Kong, a Bowser, a Dark Donkey Kong, and a Dark Bowser. I did not get the Dark variants. They're actually not very good, and they were only included in these expensive bundles. I'm sure I could probably get them for cheaper now, but yeah, they were not really worth tracking down for me. But those are the only ones that I am lacking so far.
Wow.
Not counting the cards. I don't have any of the cards.
I have, I think, 10. And I've opened them all.
Oh, all mine are open. They're definitely open.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, got to free those guys from their plastic prisons.
I have a coworker who collects amiibos, and he's pretty obsessive about it. And he has, at least at some point, I think he stopped because it was getting too expensive, but he has two full sets.
Of every amiibo?
Of, at least up to some point. At some point, he had two full sets, maybe when they only like 30 or 40 out. And I asked him, why do you have two sets? And he said, well, I need one set to keep in the package and then another one that I'm allowed to open.
Okay.
And then, but I noticed that both sets were still in the package.
Uh-huh.
So I said, well, why haven't you opened this other set then? And he said, well, that's not the point. The point is that I can open them.
I see. Yeah, I'm not worried about having a mitten package. I just want to have them all. They're all on display on my shelves near my gaming setup.
So. Well, some of them are so fun to actually play with that, I mean, especially the Smash Brothers ones. Like, I mean, how could you not want to try to level them up in Smash Brothers if you had them?
Yep, totally. But there are actually rumors of a couple more amiibo, perhaps to join your or your friend's collection. Image and Form sent out an image a couple days ago that included what appeared to be a SteamWorld amiibo. They were sort of teasing it as possibly an actual thing. They said there was some sort of hint in the picture, and that seemed to be what it was pointing to, although they promised to reveal what the secret is at PAX East in March. And then Playtonic showed off a pic of the ukulele characters that looks an awful lot like an amiibo. And this comes just a couple days after the Switch version of Ukulele was finally officially confirmed. So yeah, we could be seeing Ukulele and SteamWorld third-party amiibos on the way. Would either of those appeal to you?
I am kind of interested in Ukulele, actually. SteamWorld I haven't played, but it looks cool. Have you played it?
No, I haven't played it either, so I'm kind of in the same boat, but hey, I've got all the other amiibo. I would totally buy a SteamWorld amiibo. And I am interested in the games, too, because I've heard a lot of great things about them. It's just something I haven't got around to yet.
So Ukulele is the game by the Banjo people, right?
Yes, a bunch of ex-Rare folks formed Playtonic, and it is, yeah, a spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, how could that not be exciting?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I'm glad it's confirmed officially to be coming to Switch. I'm still a little bummed out, never made it to Wii U. But yeah, looking forward to that whenever it happens. And speaking of cool third-party published spiritual successor games, the Azure Striker Gunvolt anime is coming out very soon. That, of course, comes from the folks at Intercreates, and it plays an awful lot like the Mega Man Zero games. But now we found out that there's an anime coming out exclusive to the Nintendo 3DS. It comes out next week on February 9th, and it'll be available for only $2.99 in the eShop. I guess, personally, I would rather watch on a big screen. I would prefer it come out on, like, you know, the Wii U eShop or maybe through other means. But hey, it's better than nothing. And there's a trailer up on YouTube, and it's looking pretty sharp. From the looks of things, it's going to be about 22 minutes long, and I'm certainly interested in how that plays out. Have you played Azure Striker Gunvolt at all? Are you interested in this one?
I have never played it.
Well, I do recommend it. It's a whole lot of fun. I haven't played a ton of the games, but what I have played has been really, really enjoyable. And like I said, it's a great spiritual successor to the Mega Man Zero games. It's a lot of fun so far. My one question is, if it's coming out first in the eShop, are there going to be 3D effects? Because if so, then that can make it worthwhile. If not, then I guess I'll just have to cross my fingers that it comes out in some other form relatively soon. Guess we'll see. Moving on from there, we've got some listener mail that I would like to read and discuss and answer. We actually got a couple of really good long emails, and I wish I had time and space to read the entire things on the podcast, but for space reasons, I'm just going to, you know, read some of the highlights. The first one comes from Anthony. He says, "Longtime listener, listen to all your episodes. Glad to see it doing well. One issue I wanted to bring up is Nintendo forums. I wanted to know your history with the Nintendo Insider forums and if you were active with the online community. Insider forums were forums from 2004 to 2007 where Nintendo gamers could talk about the latest and greatest games. Nintendo Power also had a community section dedicated near the back of their issues that contained content from the forums and printed in the magazine, which I thought was a great feature. Then there was Camp Hyrule, which was an online virtual campground where users were placed in different groups and participated in mini-games and stuff, which I always found to be so much fun. 2007, though, is when the Insider forums closed down. It was a really sad time for a lot of us gamers who grew as a community. My main question for you guys is, were you ever part of Nintendo's online social phenomenon back in the mid-2000s, and would you like to see that or Camp Hyrule make a comeback?" I'll answer my part of this first, and that is that I actually didn't have a whole lot of involvement in the forums while I was there. Like Andy was saying earlier, sometimes when you're making a magazine, it can be really busy and you get, you know, very focused on doing other stuff. And so I didn't have much involvement. I did participate in a live chat Q&A once or twice, but that was about it. I will say that we really heard all of the complaints when the forums closed, though. And when we were at Future, we really wanted to fill that void. And we were hoping to do something, maybe, you know, do our own forums, but we were pretty limited in what we could do, and so nothing like that ever came to pass. But Andy, I think you were much more heavily involved than I ever was.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was on the Insider forums. My handle was NOA Cecil, and
oh yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah, I didn't participate as much as I would have liked, just because I didn't have a lot of time. But mm-hmm. I tried to get on there once in a while, and especially when we were having, every once in a while, we'd have like special chat sessions with Nintendo Power writers. I would always jump right. at the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, that was a thing I did once or twice.
Oh, okay, yeah. One thing I can say is that when they closed that down, it was a huge bummer to everybody involved, especially people like NOA Andy, who were running those forums and Camp Hyrule and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they had poured so much of their life into that, and it was, they were, I think they were probably just as sad as you guys were when it shut down. We already talked about the community section a little bit, but yeah, that, to me, that was definitely more where I spent a lot of my time reading letters that people sent in and trying to figure out what kind of stuff to put in the magazine. When we first sort of came up with that section, I think the way that I sort of envisioned it was just a place to feature like the weirder, darker corners of the Nintendoverse. And for me, it was almost like the weirder, the better. Like to this day, like every once in a while, I'll be at like PAX or somewhere, and someone will come up and tell me like how much that section meant to them, or that, or maybe like reading that section was when they first heard about this or that. And that always means a lot to me, because I feel like in some ways I was kind of discovering all this stuff with the readers.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Especially musically, especially. I think the first time we did the community section, I did a big feature on Game Boy music, and that just ended up being the start of a rabbit hole for me. And I still do that to this day.
Was that what introduced you to the chiptune scene?
Yeah.
Was writing the article?
Writing that article. I had never really, I mean, I'd heard of it, but when I started writing the article, I started researching it, and then I was like, you know what, I have to try this. And so I ended up procuring a cartridge, and when I was done writing the article, I just kept using it and kept doing it. So,
all right, very cool to know. Yeah, I guess to answer the last part of his question, yes, it would be awesome if something like that came back, or Camp Hyrule came back, and perhaps somewhere in another timeline they do still exist. But yeah, tragically, probably not very likely. But Nintendo's always experimenting with its online stuff. You know, we had Miiverse, and even though that's not continuing on Switch, it was you know, an interesting thing that you know, still going to continue on with 3DS and Wii U for the foreseeable future. So who knows what else they will continue to do down the road. Moving on to the next email. This one comes from Alexander Fisher. He writes, "The Nintendo Switch initial trailer came packaged with a moment that attracted a lot of commentary, both positive and negative, where Splatoon was presented as a spectator esport. And just tonight, it came out that the lineup for the EVO 2017 Fighting Game Championship has been decided, with both Super Smash Bros. Wii U and Melee making the cut. The ninth and final game of the tournament is up to fans to decide via a generosity fundraiser, and among the competition is the spring Switch title ARMS. Where do you think the future of Nintendo games is with regards to esports?"
You know, I have to say, I was surprised when the first Switch commercial came out and they so heavily featured competitive gaming.
Yeah, they definitely did.
So it's clear to me that Nintendo sees that as a big part of the Switch story.
Yeah, I think that was by accident. I think they intentionally put that out there to be like, yes, we want to be involved in the competitive gaming scene. And part of the email that I cut out, you know, Alexander points out that Nintendo does have a lot of esports-worthy titles. Besides Smash Brothers and ARMS, we got Mario Kart, we got Splatoon, and of course, there's Pokemon.
Yeah, I don't feel like I really have a lot of insight into that world, but it would surprise me because it seemed like in the past, Nintendo kind of avoids that a little bit, but they seem to be sort of embracing it. So I'm interested to see what they like, how much they get involved, and how much the Switch becomes sort of a competitive gaming machine.
Yeah, I certainly think they'd like it to be. I mean, aside from having a pretty good lineup when it comes to esports-worthy titles, you know, the fact that you can, you know, carry around and link up eight Switch systems, basically eight consoles, without having to carry around a big old monitor to go with your gaming console, I think that is kind of huge. And it could go a long way in making it more esports friendly. I would kind of like to see Nintendo maybe including some more options in games, like Mario Kart, for example. That's such a great competitive game. But then, of course, when the victor is determined, sometimes that comes down more to luck than skill. So I kind of like to see them maybe including some modes or options that level the playing field specifically for esports in games like that. But, you know, in all other games, really. So I think it is something that's going to grow. I think it's something they're trying to grow. And I think that we will see that continuing to be a focus from Nintendo down the road. That takes care of the listener email for this week. So let's take an intermission now, and when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is the most replay-worthy video games. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the most replay-worthy video games on Nintendo systems, in our opinions. The video gaming landscape has changed a lot over the last several years. It used to be that, you know, you could play through a top-notch video game in, you know, an hour or two. You know, I always point out Contra as being like, you know, the best 25 or 30 minutes you can have in a video game. But, you know, that's what you would get. You would, you know, pay full price for a game, and sometimes you could play through it in half an hour, and that was all right. But these days, you know, people expect their games to be hours and hours. Sometimes they're 60 or 70 or 80 or 100 hours long, and you might only play through it once. It's like, man, I really wish I could go back to it, but I just don't have the time. So that's what I was thinking about when I came up with this week's big topic. It's like, if we had all the time in the world, what games would we go back and replay? For the last couple of years, personally, I've tried avoiding replaying games because it's like, well, you know, as much as I love playing Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy, you know, maybe I should be focusing on something that I haven't already played through five times. So that was the idea behind this. And I just wanted to focus on a couple games that are so good that they are worth playing through again, even if you've already done it once. And definitely worth playing, you know, if you haven't played them before either, for that matter.
To me, this question about replaying a game is not necessarily tied to what games you think are your favorite games.
Right.
So for me, like the list was definitely not games that, well, I would say probably not games that would maybe even crack my top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them might. I try to take the question really to heart and think like, well, what games have I been thinking about over the last few months and been like, mm-hmm, man,
exactly.
I should play that again. So that's what my list is.
Well, yeah, mine's the same way. I mean, all of my favorite games I have replayed plenty of times. I've played through Twilight Princess probably, you know, five times or something. Of course, that's because I was writing the book on it. Yeah, I played through Ocarina of Time, you know, four times or something. I don't even want to know how many times I've played through Ace Attorney. It's probably ridiculous. So these are all games I really like, but they're games that, you know, for one reason or another, I just haven't had a chance to play again. So I'd like to go through our list. We'll go through our top five picks of games we want to replay. And the first one on my list is The Last Story for Wii, which is a really innovative and different kind of RPG that came out in the last year of Nintendo's Wii system. This, of course, was one that, you know, we almost didn't get, but you know, thanks to the folks at Operation Rainfall, thanks to the folks at Xseed who decided to publish it in North America, we were able to get this game. It was made by the folks at Mistwalker, so we got Hironobu Sakaguchi, the father of Final Fantasy, behind this game, and to me, it was just an amazing, magical experience. I love the fact that it has a unique combat system. I really like the distinctive characters, and I really liked the relationships between the characters, both the good guys and the bad guys. And as soon as I finished doing my review, I was like, man, I really want to play this game again. As soon as I get my retail copy of this game, I am totally going to sit down and play through The Last Story all over again. Plus, there were a couple of scenes I know I missed. There are several optional scenes in the game, and I know I missed at least one of them. So I was really looking forward to playing through it again as soon as I could, but it's been like almost 5 years and I haven't done it yet. So I would love to get back to that one. It's such a good game, and I hope everyone goes out and plays it. Andy, what's on your list?
Well, first on my list is Odama.
Ah!
The GameCube pinball game.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, Odama, for those that don't know, is...
Thanks, Odama.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real-time strategy pinball voice-activated game set
yes.
in feudal Japan. And it's created by Yute Saito, the creator of the Dreamcast game Seaman.
Yeah, I picked that as one of the most notable GameCube games when we did a GameCube retrospective for the system's anniversary a couple months ago.
Oh, nice. Good to hear. Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those games where...
It's such,
you know,
a weird game.
It's strange.
It's so strange.
You need the GameCube microphone to play it, mm-hmm. which is also just in itself a very strange accessory. And it's just weird and fun and surprising. And I don't know. I played it when it came out, and I've always wanted to play it again, and I haven't. So that's why that one's on my list. Oh, and by the way, you have to play it to the very end, because the last level is really something.
Huh, I did not. I played it somewhat, but I don't think I ever played that far into the game. So.
Well, it has a surprise ending, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but you have to play it all the way to the very end.
Intriguing. Very intriguing. Well, that one did not make my list, but the next one that did... Actually, it's cheating a little bit here, because I picked The Legend of Zelda, Oracle of Ages, and Oracle of Seasons. I'm a huge Zelda fan, as probably all listeners of this podcast know, and most of the Zelda games I have played many times. You know, Link to the Past I've played many times, Zelda 2, Ocarina of Time, Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, but I have not played Oracle of Ages or Oracle of Seasons since they first came out, like, more than 15 years ago now. I think it was back in 2001 when they first came out. And, you know, they're really, really darn good. At that point, we weren't really getting top-down Zelda games anymore. You know, we'd moved on to Ocarina and Majora's Mask. So to come back to the classic 2D style on handheld and then have, you know, really interesting aspects like, you know, having the password to carry over your progress from one game into the other, I thought were really, really cool. I loved the Seasons mechanic. And in Oracle of Ages, you know, just traveling through time, you know, wasn't that innovative. It was still a heck of a lot of fun and reminiscent of the play mechanics of A Link to the Past.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like cheating because it's two separate retail games that you had to buy separately. But I would say that I think I'll give it a pass because otherwise the part of the game that you can only play if you've finished both games,
that's right,
wouldn't be allowed to be on your list.
Secret End Boss.
So, mm-hmm. And it's all really great. Both great games. I thought about putting those on my list, but then I saw your list first, full disclosure. And then I said,
well, you
could wanna...
pick the same games. It's acceptable.
That's okay. I think they would have been my number 6 and 7. So I wouldn't have cheated like you.
You're the strategy guide for that, right?
I worked on it. Yeah, that was actually the first guide that I worked on it as a designer, but it was the first guide mm-hmm. that I really worked on where I mm-hmm. worked on the entire thing.
So probably a lot of memories there.
Fond memories of playing that game and definitely great, great games to replay.
For sure. So what's next on your list?
Oh, let's see. Oh, okay. I have Final Fantasy V.
Ah,
in particular,
that's a good one.
5 Advance, I would say, because 5 Advance mm-hmm. has a ton of extra things. It goes beyond the original with the extra job classes, and I think there's even a couple extra bosses.
That seems about right.
That is another one that I literally just last week was thinking about that game, and I was like, man, I got to play that again. And then mm-hmm. I went online and I looked up a YouTube video of someone doing a playthrough, and the person had named the main character, who by default, his name is Barts.
Or Butts in some translations.
Oh, so that's what it was. Yeah, so I saw that he had named him Butts, and I was cracking up and like a kid. But
yeah, I think before the game was ever officially released in North America, a popular romanization of his name was indeed Butts, and it might have even appeared that way in some official Japanese material.
Okay, I did not know that. I thought it was just a YouTuber being funny, so.
Nope, there actually is a good reason for that. But yeah, that's a really good pick. And I guess for me, you know, I never actually played through Final Fantasy V Advance. I played through it when it came out in the U.S. You know, it was first on PlayStation, was the first localized version that we got. Mm-hmm. And I really liked some aspects of it, but I thought the translation was kind of questionable, and so I did not love it. However, they totally fixed all that with the advanced version.
Yeah, they did.
And you're right. It does have a whole bunch of new content. And yeah, I mean, technically, I wouldn't be replaying it because I never played Final Fantasy V Advance before. But if I say, oh, yeah, I'm replaying it because I already played through it on PlayStation 1, then yeah, this would that's a great, great choice.
And another thing I'd say that makes that game so great is, to me, it's like the pinnacle of the Final Fantasy job and class system. Like, they mm-hmm. just nailed it.
Yeah, we were just talking about that last week when you weren't on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they just nailed it in that game. It's like there's been elements of it in other Final Fantasy games, but to me, that's the one where they got it just right. So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Excellent version of an excellent game.
So, what's next for you?
Well, I've got another Zelda game on my list, and this time it is The Legend of Zelda: Skyward Sword. Much like The Last Story, this is a game that I played through for Nintendo Power. I played a lot of it for Nintendo Power. I reviewed it for the magazine, and, you know, of course, you know, after we're done, you know, reviewing it, you know, our review copies are gone and we lose our save data and all that. But I wanted to be like, okay, well, I'm gonna play through this on my own and do it from the comfort of my living room and not have to worry about deadlines and things, and this time I'm gonna 100% it. But again, I never found the time to go back and do that. I think I got maybe a third of the way through the game or something like that. But there's still a lot more that I have to do, and there's still, I'm sure, you know, some side quests and things and pieces of heart and some other stuff that I probably never found when I was originally reviewing the game. Because you know, a lot of the other Zelda games that I have replayed, it's like, okay, well, I can, you know, read what other people have done and, you know, get some pointers, talk to my friends, discover things that they discovered that I didn't. At the same time, I'll, you know, tell them things I discovered that they didn't. That's always been a fun thing for me where The Legend of Zelda is concerned. But I didn't get the opportunity to do that in this case. So, yeah, armed with additional knowledge, I would love to go back and play through that game all over again. It's not my favorite Zelda by any stretch of the imagination, but still, you know, pretty much every Zelda game is great, and I would love to experience it all over again.
Yeah, I mean, every Zelda game's great. To me, Skyward Sword was a masterpiece.
Huh.
I'm always shocked when I talk to people, and they're like, yeah, it was okay, or it's not my favorite. It's probably not, like, my number one Zelda game, but I loved that game. It is just beautiful from start to finish. Great choice. Great choice. I want to replay that one, too. It's not on my list, but it should be.
Fair enough. What is your next pick?
So my next pick is Super Mario Sunshine.
Ah, I considered putting that on my list.
Oh, did you?
I considered it, yes, but ultimately it didn't make it.
You know, it's, I don't know what else to say except that it's just a weird game, and I kind of miss playing it. Like, I haven't played it in so long, and I was actually thinking about it recently, totally separate from this question, and it's, I mean, it's just bizarre. Like, I still haven't played another game like it. It's a standout game in the Mario universe. There's a lot of problems with the game. I'm not pretending like it's the perfect Mario game or something. Like, the camera is pretty abysmal, but it still is just weird and fun and quirky, and I like it for that. Mm-hmm. So.
It's definitely quirky. I feel like it was a little bit before its time, too. I just feel like, you know, when it came out, people, first of all, they've been waiting for a Mario game to hit the GameCube, and also they've been waiting for the real follow-up to Super Mario 64.
Right.
And so this arrived, and it was not really the follow-up that they wanted. It added, you know, like you said, this quirky stuff. It added in the flood. It wasn't just your typical Mario game. And because of that, because of the way that the setting played into it so heavily, I don't think people were quite ready for it at the time. So I also think it would be a great game to replay. And for a long time, I've really been wanting to see them revisit that game, hopefully with an HD remake. That's what I really want, is an HD remake of that one.
I would love that. I mean, one thing that's funny is when you go back and play that game now or watch footage of it, mm-hmm. the water effects and just the water animation is so well done. Like, it still stands out to me, even from games, like newer games in HD. So I'd love to see that one redone in HD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think it was kind of underappreciated because of what people's expectations were at the time, and it totally deserves another look. So
yeah
that's a very good pick. My next pick goes to the Capcom DS game Ghost Trick Phantom Detective. Although, to be honest, I've always thought that they really missed an opportunity by not calling it Ghost Trick Phantom Dick. It just rolls off the tongue so much better. Yeah.
I'll be honest, I have never even heard of that game.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I so disappointed. It's a really fun, cool, clever game from the guy that created the Ace Attorney series. And in this game, you play some guy who is dead. And the way you play the game is you move your spirit from object to object. And so every level is these object-oriented puzzles. And you then manipulate these objects to save other people's lives. Basically, there's another character, this woman, a police officer, and she gets caught up in whatever is going on, and you have to end up saving her life a whole bunch of times. In fact, you can rewind time. She actually gets killed, too. You rewind time and prevent her from getting killed. It's a little wacky. It's a little wonky, but it's very clever, and the characters are really memorable. The animation is fantastic. I will say it probably has the best animation on the Nintendo DS. And it's just got so much charm, a really interesting story that I'm not going to spoil here, but it's really cool, and one of the gems on the Nintendo DS. And yeah, I just haven't had a chance to play it, you know, since it since it first came out. I think I reviewed it. I think I played it as soon as I got a retail copy, and I just haven't gone back to it. But boy, I would love to.
I'm glad you brought it up, because I had never heard of it, and now it sounds like it genuinely sounds interesting to me, so I'll probably check it out.
It's really cool. It really is. Worth your time. What else you got?
Okay, I've got... This was an easy pick for me, Resident Evil 4.
Ah, okay. To me,
it's just a great game. I've played it multiple times, and I always want to play it again. It's such a good game.
Understandable.
I always think of it as a Nintendo game, because I... That's where it started, man. Yeah, I played it on the GameCube, and it was mind-blowing as a GameCube game. And I think I recall, like, it was even originally announced as an exclusive, but then
it
became multi-platform. But
that was the famous game where, I believe it was Mikami who said he would cut his head off if it came out on another platform. He did not cut his head off when it came out on other platforms, fortunately.
Well, I've only ever played it on GameCube. I loved it, and I... played it multiple times, and I always want to play it again. So,
well, that's one of my gaming shames. I've actually never finished Resident Evil 4 on GameCube or yeah, I know.
Oh, man. Well, now I'm disappointed.
I will say I was super impressed with what I played, though. It really went a long way in redefining what Resident Evil was all about.
I think that's one of the things that makes that game so great, especially if you're coming from Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3. Is you're just expecting, oh, zombies, monsters, mm-hmm. monsters. And then you're walking through this forest, and it's so realistic. And then you walk into a cabin, and there's this guy, and you think, oh, he's a zombie, oh no. But then he turns around, and he's actually not a zombie. And so you start talking to him, and he actually talks. And then you're like, okay. And then you turn your back, and then he attacks you like he is a zombie. It's very unnerving. Coming from the previous games, and it just has its own identity and mm-hmm. a great control scheme and great characters and great voice acting, and it's just a great game.
Yeah, it was really a great spin on the established formula, and probably even today it stands as perhaps the best Resident Evil game out there.
Agreed.
My fifth and last pick goes way back to the Super Nintendo. It is the action RPG Illusion of Gaia. Illusion of Gaia was a game that I had been looking forward to for a long time. It is the sequel to Soul Blazer, which was sort of a spinoff of ActRaiser, and I was a really big fan of both of those games. So I was looking forward to this quite a bit, and you know, then Nintendo ended up publishing it, which made it even more exciting. And it was just a really, really excellent action RPG. You sort of, tour the world and go to all these legendary sites, and had some very unique and interesting writing. I love to bring up the part where you find out your grandmother poisoned the bad guys with how's the line go? Oh yes, I destroyed their digestion with a poisoned marsupial pie. And then you get to get these abilities to turn into other characters. You start out mainly as a kid named Will, but then you learn the power to transform into a knight and this dude made of flame. And so you basically are able to shift between these three forms and use their different abilities. But despite looking forward to that game so much and playing through it as soon as it came out, I've never really had a chance to go back to it. I've gone back a few times and played like through the first area or two. But then after that, I haven't ever gone any further. And so I would love to be able to go back and actually sit down and play through the whole thing again. It also has like a really sort of heartwarming story. And that's something that I would like to re-experience again as well. So, yeah, I really, really wish that game could come back on Virtual Console. Neither that nor Soul Blazer has, shown any sign of ever being available again in any form after the actual Super Nintendo cartridge itself. But if there were ever a way to do it, man, I am begging you, Nintendo and Enix and Quintet, bring these games back because they're really cool. I'd love to re-experience them, and all the rest of the gaming community deserves to play them, whether it's again or for the first time. So hopefully someday it'll happen.
I never really thought about that, but they never did re-release those games.
Nope. Hopefully one day. So what's your final pick?
Well, I had a hard time with my fifth pick. There were maybe like 10 games that mm-hmm. I wanted to put in here. But I went with Fire Emblem the Sacred Stones.
Ah, okay.
And I think the reason I went with that was, well, because I think it's a great game, but also because it's really fun to play through twice. You play once as one character, and then you play once as another character, and the game kind of splits off after like three or four battles. And
oh, like I realized that.
And it goes off and becomes basically two separate games, and then comes back at the end for the final chapter. But
huh, cool.
Yeah, it's a great game. Really good Fire Emblem game. I feel like, again, I said about Final Fantasy V how I feel like that was where they kind of nailed the job system. I feel like with the Sacred Stones, that was like the game where, at least the first Fire Emblem game that I had played, where it just felt like the battle mechanic was just sort of perfected. Hmm. And it's got a great story. Great Game Boy Advance game.
All right. Pretty cool. Well, there you have it. 10 great games that are worth replaying, or if you haven't had the chance to play them before, worth trying out and sinking your teeth into and seeing what they're all about.
Well, I definitely enjoyed hearing your list, Chris. There was stuff on. There's a few games on there I haven't ever played, and there was one I'd never even heard of. So, so I'm excited to at least go check that stuff out. Definitely want to play the Ghost. I don't know. I can't remember what it's called. Ghost Trick. There you go. I'm gonna check that one out.
Yeah, and you had some great ideas on yours as well. Final Fantasy V is one I would love to play through, given the opportunity. Anyway, I think that does it for this week's big topic. And I guess it means we should be wrapping up this episode of the podcast. But before we go, there is, of course, still time for a dramatic reading. This time, it'll be from the manual from yet another game that's included in the NES classic, Balloon Fight. Take to the not-so-friendly skies in Balloon Fight. Flap furiously to stay out of the jaws of snapping fish and propel yourself past needle-nosed enemies as you try to pop their balloons before they can pop yours. Keep the enemy at bay long enough and you'll win a balloon-popping bonus round. The longer you hang in there, the tougher the challenge. Play with a friend or by yourself for high-flying adventure in Balloon Fight.
Wow, I didn't realize balloons could be so menacing.
I know. Doesn't sound so cute and adorable when you read it like that, does it?
No, it does not.
The part about the man-eating fish is especially frightening, in my opinion. Such is the joy of some of those classic NES games. So I guess that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter, at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Andy at Stenobot. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes.
Thanks for having me again. I had a lot of fun. It's always fun to talk games with The Hoff.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. It's fun to have you here. For myself, Andy Myers.
Lally-ho!
And our good friend Toad. We will see you next time.